Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. I hope everybody had a good weekend. You survived, apparently, because you're out about and listening to this show. As you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. As you know, this is the only show that will provide you with the constitutional solutions necessary in actually getting rid of most all of our problems in our life with government. We can't fix marriages. We can't fix, you know, children's behavior, those types of things. But we can fix those things that government may be influencing that might be driving some of those behavior problems. But anyway, the number to call in is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. If you didn't know, I'm going to be getting into some of the Trump campaign promises. I'll probably use the last segment to kind of cover those. And so it'll take me a while. That's why I'm just going to kind of use a segment here and a segment there to kind of cover through these. It's 282 promises that I believe it was the Washington Post. One of the writers there kind of kept track of every little promise he made on his on all of his stumpings. And actually, if you want to call them stumpings, I would call it a hit parade or a fanatic tour or what have you. But anywho, we will be getting into the militia coming up in the next couple of weeks, if not, you know, sooner. I'd love to do it sooner, but bottom line, we can only do so much at a time. And I want to, you know, make sure, because we're coming into that inaugural address, or not the inaugural, the State of the Union. And so I want to make sure we, you know, what about some of these promises? And so anyway, sometimes, you know, people just say things. I don't know why people just make all these different promises, especially when they don't have any control. They shouldn't have any control over things that are not delegated. And I'm going to get into that, because the Democrats are going to be doing that as well. We're going to be facing a 2-year barrage of campaign promises and rhetoric, setting the stage for promises and or leverages or fulcrums used for leverage so that they can try to differentiate or actually try to appeal to voters. I did want to say, I know I've been kind of haranguing this, and I don't don't mean to make anybody feel bad, but if you have not seen my video on my Take Action page, I think it's like an hour and 30 some minutes. If you watch the first 30 minutes of that video, you will get a solid understanding on what Republic Review is. That's all you've got to do, I promise. And so please take the time, if you really want to have a glimpse at what the solution would be, just watch the first 30 minutes of that video. If I'm wrong, call up 215-867-8255. Let me know where I'm wrong. And you'll let the entire audience know. And so if you agree with me, then all I ask is, and if this video in my presentation resonates with you, then I only ask that you start doing what you can. And there's many ways you can do some things. You know, like you can help if you've got the financing. You know, you don't have to send us a lot of money. I basically put it out there that if everybody just donated the cost of 1 gallon of gas, $2 a week, that would be more than enough of everybody listening. That would cover almost all of our costs for doing all the traveling that we need to do this year. And, oh, by the way, I got great news out of Wyoming. Things are moving forward. Can't tell you all the details, but that will be coming. And things are looking very good there. Had a nice conversation with a leader out there, and even though he was sick, I There's no doubt in my mind. He is the right man and moving this stuff forward. So anywho, we are working with a lot of other organizations and hoping to help restore the Constitutional Republic, but we can't do it all. What we need your help, whether that be financial, just like getting these guys in 2 years, actually, yeah, during the 2020 election, in just basically a year and a half, I am going to be begging and pleading that you put money into candidates that can actually save your state and save our Constitutional Republic. So those things are really, really important. And we can't get away from the financial cost of politics and the financial cost of just getting things done. Other ways you can help is if you send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, I will reach back to you. I mean, I don't let emails not go answered. I used to have people work for me that were leaders that would, you know, kind of brag, that hold a chest out. I have 1,000 unread messages. Well, that's unsat. I mean, even if they're spam, you should go through them and, you know, dispatch them quickly and identify what's important, because you never know what could be in one of those emails. There are reasons why you are receiving emails, whether it's an advertisement, whether it's phishing, or whether it is informative, or whether it is a plea, who knows? But you need to make sure that you check all those emails and, you know, start using filters to minimize some of that. Anyway, if there are ways you can support, I would tell you one way by sending us an email, because I read them, is, you know, letting me know what you can do. If you've got a computer and a phone, you're willing to make phone calls, or you're just willing to do research, let's talk. Let's find out what you can do, and let's get working together. Because if we're not working together, then we're not going to get anything done, because this does require a joint effort. More than just a couple people that are working already. We need to grow this effort, and I'm hoping that you're willing to commit this year into doing whatever you can do, whatever that is. I'm just hoping and praying that we can grow this effort. So, as you know, I always check the news, and as I looked, even though the government is shut down and they're not doing a lot of things, they're still running a tab. And when they, you know, finally agree to start the government back up again, then there's going to be a big check to pay in each of these branches, departments, and everybody's going to try to get back pay and so forth. I think that's a crime. I think if you are not working, so like the TSA, those guys are working, they should get paid. But if you're not going to into the office because it's shut down and you don't have an essential job, then you should not get paid, period. If you're not being productive, you're not actually putting your time in and labor, then what do you expect to get paid? Most people believe that they're, you know, entitled to pay, and that is an incorrect perception. More importantly, how many of these jobs are constitutional? And these people are griping that they're not getting paid. They should be losing their job because it's unconstitutional. But that's another story, and that's what we get into with Republic Review. One thing to look forward to, and as far as I know, I don't see it in the next couple of weeks, but I will be getting to Senior Bush. I should say President Bush Sr., he will get his tribute, and I will kind of cover that. That may take more than a one-show episode, just due to the fact of all the things that there is about Mr. Bush, and I don't know how deep I want to get into it. But let me change subjects. I know that Trump has already put a shot across the bow last, I think it was fall, when he started pointing out that anchor babies and that issue with the 14th Amendment is unconstitutional, that we should not be. And so if you prove that something is illegal, then if somebody is granted something on an illegal basis, that means that what they've been granted is illegal and it has no base. So here's the thing. If Trump wants to challenge the anchor baby issue, he could begin with this Islamic congressperson, Rashida Tlaib, and literally go after her and proving that she should not have been, she is not eligible to serve because she did not really go through the appropriate citizen process, period. The interpretation of the 14th Amendment was completely wrong, and it was, you know, it was done so to undermine, and bottom line, there is no interpretation in the Constitution. It's either there or it isn't, and you could have easily gone back to the explanations during the Congressional Globe of the 14th Amendment. It is online, and you can actually read why they put those clauses in the way they did. It was literally to help legitimize those who were in service, or actually service, slavery. And it legitimized the former slaves, who were then called freemen, a guarantee to citizenship. And the southern states were doing everything they could not to let those things happen. And so that's why the 14th Amendment literally was rammed down their throats under duress. And a lot of people don't like that. But bottom line, we had to fix this problem, or what, you know, or we had to either spend that money to help repatriate all the freemen to go back to Monrovia. But I mean, there is a legitimacy of people that, you know, live here and have lived here and want to stay here. I don't know if, you know, that's a case by case, and that was 100 years ago. But bottom line, the fact is that the anchor baby is a really bad, out of proportion interpretation. And so we'll be right back after this. I'll close up on this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
To be clear, for a person to become a citizen of the United States, and in this particular case, when both parents have come here and are subject to the jurisdiction of another sovereign, another state, another government, then they are not citizens, and their child that they bear, or, you know, any babies that they have at before or even after they come here on American soil, do not become automatic citizens. Every child that is born to foreigners, both parents being foreigners, has to go through the application process to become a citizen, period. The only way a child becomes a legitimate citizen is if that parent, both parents have been naturalized, or at least one parent has been naturalized. You have to have at least one parent subject to the jurisdiction. And then if you got only one, then you'll basically hold dual citizenship. That child will be a dual citizen of both the United States and what other country the other parent is a subject to. And so subject to the jurisdiction, not a subject as in a serf or so forth. Anyway, there is a legitimate question as to her citizenship, and I believe that this is one of those things that needs to be fixed. I think that the Supreme Court's got to roll up their sleeves and really look at this and go, do we really cancel out all these citizens? There is merit in doing it. I think that if a person really wants to be a citizen, they should apply. If they did not legitimately, by the essence of the law, by the letter of the law of the 14th Amendment, if they did not legitimately become a citizen, then they need to go through that. They may want to, grant them a unique moratorium or a unique position or status. But that's for the Supreme Court to make that decision. The bottom line is that the politicians and even activist judges have been making illegitimate and incorrect interpretations, literally bypassing and ignoring the documentation and the definitions that were provided as a part of these changes to the contract were occurring. Bottom line, it is a contract and we have to abide by the letter of the definitions provided in the contract. As each of these things, whether it was the contract itself or the amendments to the contract, they all had definitions provided in the legislative debates right there in Congress and as it went to the states. Go through those, then you will have complete clarity in understanding the intent of that law instead of allowing an activist judge to literally create an unconstitutional condition and situation where now we have a bunch of people that shouldn't be citizens. And so this has got to get fixed, and it's a part of the process of Republic Review. We have to get through all of these details so that we clarify down to the nitinoid exactly what the federal government has powers to do and what it doesn't have to do. Now, let me get into just a little nudge reminder that what's going on with the shutdown of the government on principle is literally a constitutional principle, because the federal government does have enumerated within the Constitution an interest in protecting our borders. They have a responsibility. Anybody that is serving in the capacity as a federal government elected official, from the president, congressman, and so forth, they have a responsibility to ensure that our borders are protected, that not just anybody willy-nilly walks across, that anybody can come here for refugee status or what have you. Show me in the Constitution where we are supposed to have refugee open doors and those types of things. You won't find it. And as a matter of fact, you won't even find it as a ratified treaty with the UN. So let's move forward. What I believe Trump should do is he, with the closed EPA and so forth, while these things are closed, start writing executive orders that will literally shut down permanently the EPA. Then I could report that at the beginning of the show. Hey, I looked through the news and hey, they shut down the EPA. Now the next president can come along and start them up again, but he should literally shut down EPA, education, Department of Transportation, Homeland Security, all of these unconstitutional things that they're doing. And all the money that he will save, because all of a sudden the federal government won't be running a deficit, will have a surplus. He'll have extra money, and so he won't have to worry about how that lays out in his budget. He'll just use it as national defense, and there'll be more than enough money for that. Up front, the cost in actually building the wall, and I'm not necessarily a real big fan for walls, because walls work both ways, right? They can keep people out, they can keep people in. I am not a big fan of that type of thing. But when we have such a porous border, when we have all of these other things working against us, we have to do something. So a wall would be the best thing at this point in time, because that is just too big of a border for the for evil people to be able to come across and exploit. So we need to literally start going down this path of, you know, forcing these unconstitutional governments, or at least Trump does. If Trump wants to pay for it, shut down the EPA. How much? What is their budget? That budget would more than pay for the wall and everything else. And watch the Democrats just go into panic mode. The progressives will, because I mean that's a holy department to them, right? I mean, the EPA, that's the thing that actually they use to straddle us with all sorts of things, whether that be the Agenda 21 issues. I mean, that is one of their biggest agencies that they use to bring down the globalist agenda on us. And so anyway, one of the things I've also mentioned a little bit last week in the past couple weeks is because the left uses labels as a tool to destroy their opposition, I think labels are necessary in combating their extreme agenda, like their misandry agenda, and operatives such as Representative Cortez, as she has used all sorts of extreme cases in going after her opponents and anybody who opposes her. So what I want to do is get people to start using, I think, labels for her, because she's become the poster child of communism. And you can actually, you know, just call her Cortez the Killer the Second. Or I also like the Oso Communist, as in Oso the Communist. So let's go with that one. Oso the Communist. Anyway, as I said earlier, I know that there's going to be a lot of campaigning over the next 2 years. What I will even say is there will be a lot of showboating in D.C. by the Democrats for the next 2 years, with elaborate offers and incredible accusations and so forth. We're already seeing that from Pelosi and Schumer. We're going to see even more of that. These efforts are designed to buy votes and stimulate people into believing in socialism and communism. Bernie's all ready to throw out a bill on a $15 an hour minimum wage. There's been all these thoughts on free college, free health care, and all the freebies the government can offer. Even recently, they're looking into controlling drug prices so the drug prices can be, you know, more affordable. In other words, controlling the costs of production, controlling the means of production. That's a plank in communism, my friends. There are ways of curing the cost of manufacturing drugs, but you know, there are reasons for the pricing and so forth. But bottom line, we should not be subsidizing other nations, and pharmaceuticals should not be giving away the cost of drugs to other nations cheaper than what they're giving to us. And they've been doing that for a long time. So there's ways to go after Big Pharma. But what they're trying to do is literally stimulate this premise of socialism and communism, getting people to, you know, go to their side so that they can vote. This is tantamount to buying votes, and that is illegal. You can't tell me that, hey, I'm promising you these things, vote for me and you get these things. That's the same thing as buying a vote. What's the difference, whether it's a glass of alcohol or if it's a whole bunch of money pouring into your, or, you know, taking away the things you have to spend money on so that we can give you free services? It is the same thing. It should be illegal. Anybody that makes these kinds of promises should be locked up. But it is just, it is par the course, and it's the paradigm of both Republicans and Democrats. And we need to shut this paradigm down, especially when the Constitution does not allow it. I mean, free health care. Where in the Constitution does the federal government have an enumerated power to have any jurisdiction over health care, period? They don't. So when the Constitution doesn't allow it, that means that you shouldn't be able to promise that and then deliver it because the Constitution doesn't allow it. The governments, both state and federal, are defined and limited constitutional governments. If there is no delegated power in the Constitution, whether that be the state or the federal, then they are violating their Constitution. And you're going to find that even at the state level, those constitutional limitations are just as hard fast in the state government and state constitution as they are for the federal. And so we're going to find that through the audit process, we're going to actually be able to start, you know, identifying these things and get rid of them, and or we're going to force the issue to say, do we really need to take this over, or how can we fix this? And that is what politicians and leaders are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be fixing problems, not creating them. And by just literally creating all of this unconstitutional power creates problems. As you can tell, I'm at a hard break, so we will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Sorry for all the throat clearing. I don't know. No, I don't think I'm sick, but you never know. It could be that feeling before that feeling, like on Everybody Loves Raymond. You know, the day before you really feel it. Anyway, let's hope not. I hate getting sick. Anyway, doing business with evil ideologues. Let's take a focus on our foreign relations and those types of things, because obviously we're doing business with a lot of evil ideologues, and doing business with evil ideologues has consequences. China is probably the most evil ideologue out there. They have no limitations to what they can do and what they can dictate. And they literally have that level of control over their people. These aren't just blank, unfounded assertions by moi. I mean, there is more than enough evidence for anybody to actually find that, wow, I can't believe that they're doing this. Anyway, China is apparently with this Robert Lloyd Schlesinger, who is, I believe he's a Canadian citizen that was smuggling some crack or something, you know, methadone or methamphetamines or what have you, drug trafficking. He was charged with drug trafficking and was sentenced to some years and about $20,000 in fines. And so, interestingly enough, after they had come out with that jurisdiction, the family, because there is this thing out there, remember, Madam Ming Wangzhou, the chief financial officer of Huawei, well, they're doing anything and everything they can to play tough and evil, and they're going to start executing anybody and almost everybody that looks like they could be a spy. And you know what? There's nothing we can do about it, because that's, you know, that's what happens when you're doing business with an evil ideologue. And so if you travel to China, you take your life into your own hands. Same thing with Russia. There's that Marine, the former Marine, actually a disgraced Marine, that was caught for supposedly spying, and they're wading him through the process. They're going to use, because that's what they do. They play these political pawns, and they try to play, because they have nefarious actions and they're doing nefarious things. When they get caught, they go, oh, now we need to go against somebody. So they trump up charges, and there is never really a tit for tat, but that's what they try to make it look for or look like. And so, unfortunately, Robert has now been sentenced. I believe he was just sentenced today or yesterday to death instead of his fines and so forth, trying to ramp it up. And it just so happens to be a Canadian citizen, because that's where Madam Wangzhou is, you know, and they want her back. They're trying to save face. They're trying to do anything and everything they can to try to obfuscate the real truth. So there are consequences when we have to do business and dealings with evil ideologues like China and Russia. So interestingly enough, there is also this little tidbit in the news regarding the Supreme Court rejecting an appeal by veterans who have been made sick. And actually, some of them, I believe, have died over the illnesses that they've acquired from burning really harmful chemicals and all sorts of waste and so forth in these burn pits in Iraq. I'm here to tell you that the government, I don't understand why this is a legal thing, other than the fact that the military is not taking liability for this. And so it's going to the Supreme Court. When it comes down to it, I don't know how to fix things like this, because you're always going to have a disadvantage. And this is where I've had this conversation. So I'm going to open up a door of theory to you that would literally, you know, make a major change in the Supreme Court, the makeup of the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court becoming a federal position literally is a, you know, it has its vested interest in protecting its siblings. In other words, the president and Congress and the work that they're doing, because they work together to try to promote an agenda. And I've always had a problem with this. As a matter of fact, Thomas Sowell, I've listened to lots of really brilliant people say, that's what you're going to get. They're going to rule in favor of their own advantages. Very rarely do they actually break against and actually, you know, do what they're supposed to do in protecting our liberties and protecting the Constitution. So I actually believe that the best way to go about the, you know, the Supreme Court process is actually each state appointing its own Supreme Court, you know, and then not a Supreme Court judge, justice, so that you'd literally have 50 justices in the Supreme Court to be able to hear more cases. They can break these things down into panels, and then they can all, you know, basically debrief them. They could do a lot more work with 50 judges, and the federal government's responsibility would be appointing a chief justice. That way you don't have, you know, you're always going to have the vested interest because that judge may have, you know, for the state of California, that judge in California may have some vested interest over the California issues, but they won't have vested interest over Mississippi issues, if you understand what I'm saying. So each state and each judge would really have to be that's about as close as you could get to impartial other than the ideologies, that these people tend to possess. Are they communist or are they, you know, they're promoters of liberty? Because bottom line, whoever's going to be appointing these judges and these judge terms should probably last, 6, 7 years, maybe 8 years or something like that, but they shouldn't be permanent. The only permanent position would be the Chief Justice. And so what would happen is that these judges would kind of work through this caseload, and whenever they come to a final decision where it literally is tied 25-25, then the Chief Justice's responsibility is to breaking the tie. Hopefully, when it comes to certain types of cases, it would require a supermajority, like a 2/3, something greater than just a 50% plus one, especially when it comes down to very specific interests. But you've got to understand the Supreme Court's jurisdiction is literally confined to those enumerated powers. But in doing this, I think that these young men and women who have been made sick in these pits, they would actually have a far more sympathetic ear, and there would be no reason why the Supreme Court would not hear this. Another interesting bit in the news is that the LA teachers are on strike. Now, is this a bad thing or is this a good thing? If you look at our education system, there are all sorts of problems with, you know, the curriculum, all the way down to financing, you know, down to teaching, ideologies, and so forth. I don't know if I care. I do know this, that if the schools are closed, then the kids are far better off because the kids aren't being exposed to the indoctrinations, and hopefully the parents would start, you know, considering homeschooling if they love their kids. If their kids mean something to them, they would start homeschooling and getting their kids exposed to really good educational principles instead of social engineering. Another thing in the news that I think is really important that I just picked this thing up. Homosexuals, if you haven't heard, in Chechnya are being purged. They're literally going through, and there's like 100 homosexual men that were arrested, detained, and so forth. A few of them have been tortured. A couple have been killed. And this is a terrible thing, but this isn't a paradigm that actually exists. I mean, Putin has been really anti-homosexual. Technically, I'm anti-homosexual, but I'm also pro-liberty. I do not believe we should have laws to do that, but I do not believe that homosexuals should have any input in the educational process. Why? Because they cannot naturally procreate. They can't make kids. Show me a kid in any school system, or show me a person alive today that is the byproduct of two homosexuals. Can't find one. As a matter of fact, I like pointing that out whenever I get on a plane and people ask me, we get into this concept of, you know, homosexuality. I go, well, show me anybody here that is a byproduct of homosexuality. In other words, you know, both men, you know, submitted their DNA and formed that person. No, we have been undercutting, and we've got lots of very sympathetic people that have helped them so that they can overcome the consequences of their behavior. Remember, I've said this before, when you make the choice to not be able to procreate because you want to align yourself and pervert yourself into thinking, oh, well, you know, I don't want to, you know, engage in that kind of activity. I want to engage in this kind of activity. Okay, well, there's consequences that come with that. You're not ever going to be able to have kids. So do not come to us and say, hey, I want to have kids. Please make kids for us. No. Sorry, there's the consequences. Maybe you would have thought better. And I think that with people having these hardships, that's how kids learn. I'm telling you, if you took kids into prison and showed them the life in prison, they would probably be far less, or showed them, you know, the consequences of smoking by the damages of the lung. Show these kids that the consequences of never being able to really have their own kids. And science should not be dedicated in trying to get rid of the consequences. We spent way too much money on sexually transmitted diseases instead of trying to actually cure other really important things. Why? Because they are focused in trying to remove the consequences of bad behavior. In other words, they're trying to nullify what sin is, and they're trying to make us godless. Does this all make sense? I hope so. Anyway, I'm at a hard break, so when we get back, we'll be getting into some of the Trump promises. So thank you so much, and I'll be right back after this. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so here's the article. If you want it, I will post it. But I think I'd rather just wait for you to actually send me an email. So info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. But Jenna Johnson for the Washington Post has written an article regarding the campaigns. Let me get to the title of this because I just had it open. And the title was, "I Will Give You Everything Here." I will give you everything, and here are the 282 Donald Trump campaign promises. And so one of the first things he promised, and she doesn't tie them or cite them. I wish she would have. I wish she would have cited these quotations out of which address, out of which, you know, whether it was a debate or whether it was a rally or what have you. But the first one is, create at least 25 million jobs and be the greatest jobs president God has ever created. Number two, bring back manufacturing jobs from China, Mexico, Japan, and elsewhere. States that can expect a rush of jobs include Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Michigan, Ohio, Florida, New Hampshire, Iowa, Nevada, New York, and Virginia. How many of those states are battleground states? Anyway, the third one, encourage manufacturers to build or grow factories in the United States with tax incentives. Fourth, refuse to eat another Oreo until Nabisco fully moves production back to the United States from Mexico. I don't know. Has he eaten an Oreo yet? I don't know. Anyway, I want to share these with you because we're halfway through his term. And so, you know, how many of us have really kept on a track? And the whole point of this, like I said before, is politicians, so it doesn't matter if they're Democrat or Republican, they tend to make promises and promising you the world when technically they shouldn't be doing these things. They should literally be, you know, if we wanted them to actually do things, we have to make the ground level. And so we have to pass a law that says, you know, it's illegal for you to make any type of promise that says, I'm going to do these. I support these types of policies. What you have to do is you have to support constitutional amendments if what you're talking about in a policy has nothing to do within the Constitution, because now you're talking about things that are outside the confines of your job description, outside of your ability to serve as a public servant. So the next one, promise five, tell Ford's president that unless he cancels plans to build a massive plant in Mexico, the auto company will face a 35% tax on cars imported into the United States. Trump is confident he can get this done before taking office. Trump has twice incorrectly said this has already happened. So at least that's her little anecdotal piece of information. But I can tell you, and be honest with you, Jenna, I believe that's her name, Jenna. Yeah, Jenna Johnson, she is a progressive. I mean, so she's not going to be, you know, out there being objective. She's trying to shine a negative light. But I'm not trying to be amplifying a negative light. What I'm trying to do is show you how it doesn't matter, Republicans and or Democrats make campaign promises that they shouldn't be doing within the confines of the Constitution and the responsibilities of the office that they're seeking. These things should not be uttered. Get Apple to start building their damn computers and things in this country instead of in other countries. That's quote unquote. Call the executives at the parent company of Carrier, an air conditioning manufacturer that is closing a plant in Indiana and moving to Mexico, and threatened to impose a 35% tariff on all conditioners imported into the United States. Trump predicts the company will say, sir, we've decided to stay in the United States. And actually they did. If you remember correctly, they did just that. Number eight, bring back the steel industry to Pennsylvania and use American steel in all federal infrastructure projects. Well, okay, so there is no such thing as a constitutionally federal infrastructure, but my point being that this is how they placate to the different voter bases. Obviously, this is, you know, the Ohio, Pennsylvania, the steel belt, and this is a plea to them to vote for him for these things. And he's actually delivered unconstitutionally on these things as well. Make the auto industry in Michigan bigger and better and stronger than ever before. Trump plans to return to the state each time a new factory or auto plant opens. Now, I'm not sure if they've opened any, and I'm not sure if he's gone there, but that was promise number nine. Promise number 10, bring the coal industry back to life in the Appalachian Mountain region. Well, there's more coal being produced out in Michigan or Montana, I believe. I don't know about Wyoming, but there are a lot of coal mines. And so, you know, playing to the Appalachian Mountain region means obviously West Virginia and those types of states. Number 11, require employers to recruit from the unemployment office, not the immigration office. Now, I don't know how we can require, but that's one of those things that, you know, this immigration problem is what it is. And unless he's going to start doing deportations and enforcing the laws, then, you know, we have to kind of play, you know, these other games, which aren't really within the Constitution. Let's just faithfully execute the law. Let's enforce the law, right? That's what the president's supposed to be doing. Number 12, leave the federal minimum wage at $7.25 per hour, which is already too high. Actually, there shouldn't be a federal minimum wage. Get rid of that. Get rid of, you know, the Well, the states have their own. If the states have the constitutional power to set the age and compensations for labor and so forth, then okay. But if the states do have that kind of power, the people really need to start evaluating whether the states should have that power. They should not be having those types of little nitinoid powers. There is more merit in rewriting your state constitution and making them a little more limited as well. The next one, number 13, raise the federal minimum wage to $10 an hour as $7.25 is too low. The minimum wage has to go up. So here is a contradiction that she's pointing out. And again, she's not identifying what stump speech or what have you, but I'm gonna bet because she put it out there, she has to have that type of information. So you can go and get with Miss Jenna Johnson and say, hey, these 282, please cite where each of these, you know, quotes and each of these campaigns came from. Then you can verify the veracity of her assertions here. Anyway, number 14, allow states to set their own minimum wage. Now, a different spin on it. Under Trump presidency, the American worker will finally have a president who will protect them and fight for them. Well, that's kind of hyperbole, but anyway, it's a nice message. Here's the next, the first set in the queue was jobs. This one is approach to the presidency. I'm going to be so presidential, you're going to be so bored. He might also be tweeting. So obviously he will not be boring you with tweeting. So anyway, he also says, I refuse to be politically correct. Now, I think he's definitely delivered on that promise. 18, my only interest is you, the American people, not major donors, the party, or corporations. I honestly think he's been solid on that too. As much as possible, far more than any other president we've had, be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. I don't know about that. I don't even know if I care, other than as long as he's healthy enough to do his job. Pass on the president's annual salary of $400,000. Now, has anybody been making political hay on that? Is he still passing? Is he still not doing those things? And so I think that that is, that's one of those things that he could easily make political hay on and, you know, put it out there for other people to just start stepping up, right? So with that, I'll get to the next one. I would not be a president who took vacations. I would not be a president that takes time off. Trump will make time for golf, but promises to always play with leaders of countries and people that can help us. 22, I promise I will never be in a bicycle race. That I can tell you. Trump has criticized Secretary of State John F. Kerry, who was injured while riding a bicycle amid the Iran negotiations. In negotiation, this is 23, in negotiation, you will be willing to walk. When the other side knows you're not going to walk, it becomes absolutely impossible to win. So he's just talking about his style and what he's going to do. And I'm thankful that he's been walking on the Democrats. I believe that he needs to, unfortunately, or fortunately, we actually got the rhinos out of office because we had, 40-some-odd Republicans actually just resigned to just not run again. And a lot of those seats were taken up by Democrats. Well, it's maybe better that we actually have Democrats that we can replace than have rhinos who are entrenched. And so we need to start purging, not like the homosexuals. We need to purge the communists out of our government. And with that, my friends, I am G.R. Mobley. I am reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. So please stay tuned, and I'll be back tomorrow, and we'll get some more of these Trump promises through.
I have been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.